Inspired Parenting Radio Show with host Sandy Sedgbeer, where our mission is to inspire conscious parents, families, and educators by bringing you the latest research and thinking on supporting today's highly evolved children to fulfill their potential as healthy, confident, resourceful, and emotionally intelligent individuals.
Hello. Well, it seems we have some technical problems today. We're just trying to get our guest, Lara Honus-Webb, on the telephone. Bear with us for a few seconds.
Hello?
Lara, hello. Welcome.
Hi.
I hope we've got you on the line here. It's very difficult
to
tell.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Okay, well, let's start the show. Right, I just want to tell everybody that you are adamant that in today's school, children have to be good at everything. But in the real world, they only have to be really good at something, which is why you say we have to change the message we're giving to our children, and especially the ones diagnosed with learning disorders. Because when it comes time to get a job, they have a hard time selling themselves because their education has focused so much on their weaknesses. I'm just going to tell our audience a little bit about you, Lara, so they're familiar with your background. You're a clinical psychologist and a worldwide expert on ADD. And you say that many of the symptoms of ADHD can be seen as the side effects of deep imagination, which is the single most important factor in creating something new. And that all children have fantasies. But those diagnosed with learning issues like ADD and ADHD, and let's face it, more and more students are being diagnosed with these conditions, have lots of fantasies. While these can be a distraction, they can also give students the power to create a new world. So what do we need to do to help all of our children, not just those diagnosed with learning disorders? What changes need to be made in the education system? And if our children's schools can't make those changes, how can we help them at home? Well, Lara, as a clinical psychologist and a world expert in ADHD, you have a great deal of experience in this direction. So tell us, what can we do about this?
Well, I think, you know, the first comment that you made, that we have to give kids the message that to be successful in the real world, you just have to be really good at something. And because they're given the message that they have to be good at everything, what happens is they lose self-confidence. And if a person loses their self-confidence, then they begin to lose their motivation. And then once the grades start to reflect that, they lose their ambition. And we all know that ambition is really the driving force, what makes people successful and what makes people work harder. So it's really about building on your child's strengths and encouraging them. You know, sometimes I think it just comes down to something so simple. Are we going to be encouraging or discouraging?
Well, you know, this whole thing about we need to educate creative minds by valuing creative minds and encouraging rather than discouraging imagination. What's happened to our schools that we've gone so far away from this?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I even have so many specific stories that I hear in my practice. For example, I had a client that before she wrote her paper, she did everything she was supposed to do, but she wrote a poem at the beginning because she just wanted to keep herself alive. You know, she was a very creative girl. And then when she got her grades back, not only did she not get extra credit for the poem, but she got points off because she wasn't following directions. And in some ways, that's just one little isolated incident. But in some another way, I wonder if that represents our education system, this narrow-mindedness that we emphasize following directions more so than a person who she did something more than she was asked, and that was overlooked.
Wow. You know, I think that from what I can observe, there seems to be a almost like a standardization going on in education. And I see this in England, where academics are more important than anything else. And I think you've said it yourself, you know, what is it, 95% of schools have football teams, but very few of them have much else.
Right, that, you know, we were even talking about, like, you know, for example, it seems like in the future kids are going to have to learn coding and, you know, computer coding. And we know lots of kids who are just naturally gravitate to computers and are really good at it. And schools are still sticking to kind of the key 20th century subjects of writing, reading, and arithmetic. And, you know, in some statistics...
Are we not on air?
Yeah. And some schools say they have only 1% classes and have classes in coding.
I'm sorry, I missed that. These technical problems are continuing, I'm afraid. Just run that last bit by me again, please, Lara.
That, you know, we know so many kids who, you know, are love computers and are drawn to them, and yet only 1% of schools have coding classes, and yet there's all this excitement about football teams, and 95% of schools will have football teams, and it doesn't even map onto what the future is. And it's not taking advantage of the gifts of these kids who naturally are drawn to computers.
Well, the other thing is that I've noticed, and I don't know how prevalent this is in America, but it's certainly the case in England. You know, years ago, Howard Gardner came up with his multiple theories of intelligence, multiple forms of intelligence. And from what I've seen, very few schools are actually acknowledging it, that, you know, a kid could be an absolute whiz at computers and science. But if they are not so hot on maths or English, then they're considered failures.
Right. And that goes back to what we know about success in the real world. And we all want our kids to have, you know, the basic competence. And but if you can encourage your kids along their specialized interests, then they're going to be more motivated and more confident for those other subjects. And so, you know, my experience in the American school system is if I go sit in on an IEP meeting, you know, it's just a focus on what's not working and in all of the classes that things aren't working in. And it's, again, it's that effect of really giving them the wrong message that they're going to need to actually be successful. The other thing at the beginning of the hour is, what do we think is going to happen when these kids graduate? Their job is to sell themselves. We talk about how many millennials can't find jobs or can't keep jobs. To be able to sell yourself, you have to have a real clear conception of what you're better at than anyone else, what you're really good at, what you can do, what you bring to the table. But our education system doesn't focus on nurturing that ability.
Well, exactly. I mean, if it's disregarding the very things that these kids are good at, of course they're going to leave school with a complete lack of confidence.
Right. And, you know, we can say lack of confidence, and people can think that's sort of a Northern California speak. You know, we're talking about self-esteem. But what I end up seeing is that can translate into clinical depression, clinical anxiety disorders, addictions, eating disorders. So this ends up, and that's where we really see the impact, is because we pretend as parents, and now I'm going to speak directly to parents because, I mean, I'm not in charge of the education system. You know, that's not like my mission to be able to change that. But as parents, you have to realize that there are trade-offs for the performance demands on their mental health.
Well, yeah, I mean, and talking about mental health, isn't school such a great stress for kids these days? Many of them struggle so much, you know, that it's depressing for them to have to go to school.
Right. And when it's exactly the environment that we're talking about, where you know, particularly if there's a learning disorder or some kind of other stressor in the person's life. But even as you're saying that, just the, you know, the pressure, and there's, you know, lots of evidence that the pressures have changed dramatically in the last 10, 20 years, and the pressures themselves can create, we can call it stress, which can turn into depression, which can turn into anxiety. And how do we think kids manage stress? They usually may become addicted to video games, or if they're in middle school, they might find some other kids smoking pot or drinking alcohol. They might find online porn, which becomes a way to distract themselves. And so it can open the door to a lot of negative habits that can lead to mental health problems.
Yeah, and you know, I want to make it clear, we're not bashing teachers here, because I think many of the teachers feel very constricted in what they are allowed to do. I mean, they're the people on the ground with these kids. And for some of them, it's stressful not to be able to nurture the kids in the way that they might like to.
It's such a great point, because in fact, teachers now, we ask so much more of them. And, you know, they're supposed to, you know, watch our kids, to educate our kids, to make them, you know, all of these great things. And so then some ways the pressure's on them too. So it's really not about that. It's about really having to look as a parent, look at yourself and realizing there's going to be trade-offs between achievement and mental health, and finding what your kid is great at versus having them be competitive and getting all A's and B's. You know, a simple example is, some parents realize their kids are very creative, and let's say they're in high school, and they'll say, you know what, if you want to not focus on getting A's and B's, and when you come home, work on your artwork, and, you know, maybe you'll go to a community college and then make some decisions there about what you want to do after that, where they kind of allow their child to have a different track, or they say, we're not going to push you to get the A's and the B's, and we're going to let you follow your creativity. I mean, sometimes that can be not only a choice for their actual real vocation, but it can also be a choice for mental health.
We'll come back to that in a moment, Lara. You're listening to the Inspired Parenting Radio Show, and I'm speaking with clinical psychologist Dr. Lara Honus-Webb about whether today's schools are preparing our children for the real world. We'll be back in a few moments, so don't go away.
A conscious lifestyle for a mindful life. OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
Do you want to be a better communicator? Do you want to better connect with the important people in your life? Do you want to enrich your relationships? If so, join me, Matthew Cooper, on the Positive Control System show every Wednesday evening at 11 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time on OM Times Radio. I'll meet you there.
Eros Evolution is where sexuality and spirituality meets. Join me, clinical sexologist Martha Tara Lee, on Eros Evolution on Thursdays, 4 p.m. Eastern, on OM Times Radio.
As difficult as it is to believe, there are places in Africa where human traffickers sell albino children and their body parts for use in magic rituals. Humanity Healing International is actively working in Uganda to change this paradigm. The Albino Rescue Project finds albino children who are at risk and places them in safe schools and environments where they can learn and grow free from fear. To learn more or to sponsor a child, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is. Free your mind with OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
Welcome back to the Inspired Parenting Radio Show. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with clinical psychologist and author of The Gift of ADD and ADHD books, Dr. Lara Honus-Webb. Lara, the question, is today's education system preparing our children for the real world? You say that there are three things that make the answer to this complicated. What are they?
Well, one thing is this, is are we pushing as parents, so this is to the parents, are we pushing achievement over mental health? And the second thing is, the world has changed so much in the last 10 years that even as parents, we don't really understand what we're preparing our kids for. You know, think about how much even just the iPhone has changed the way the world operates. It's easy to imagine, you know, that people will telecommute nonstop and that people will work from home and have home-based work. Or, I mean, I'm just making this stuff up. I'm not a futurist, but it's easy to see that the world's going to be completely different in another 10 years. And so what exactly are the skills that they need? And I think most of us do know that they're going to have to do with technology and information and media, especially social media. And then another thing has to do with the fact that entire industries are being upended, and a lot of people are questioning what's the value of the bachelor's degree. And again, I don't have an answer to that other than to say, it seems like there's this narrow, narrow goal that a lot of communities fall into. We've got to get our kids into the very, very best college. That's the ultimate goal, and get through that as quickly as possible to get out, and then they're not even equipped to sell themselves, and they may be entering a world that we right now as parents can't even imagine.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, 20, 25 years ago when my son was at, you know, college, some of his friends were getting degrees in all kinds of obscure subjects. Never, ever to use them. But the fact that they had the degree got them the job in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, with there's such a push now towards online learning. And so let's just imagine that's going to open up. It won't be so narrow and limited where anyone maybe can get an education, and that this unnecessary pressure that we're putting on kids, you know, may evaporate in the sense that they may be able to go at their own pace, at their own time, as we embrace new technologies of learning. Imagine as virtual reality comes into the world and we have, and kids can, you know, have immersive virtual reality as ways to learn about what happened in history. Or so our education's going to change, our world's going to change. We're not even sure what we're preparing them for, and yet we're putting this immense mental stress on them.
You know, it seems to me that the education systems are a little bit like dinosaurs or great big battleships that take, you know, hours to come to a stop and turn around. In this case, it's going to be decades to come to a stop and turn around.
As a very simple point, let's say this typical model of there's 30 kids and there's one teaching everyone at the same level. Well, we know we already have the technology for kids to work at a level, you know, with a computer to direct them to work more on what they're having a hard time and not have to work and work less on things that they've already mastered, where it is responsive, completely responsive to the strengths and weaknesses of each student. Imagine how much time, you know, people will save if they can adopt some of these more efficient, effective, responsive technologies.
Yeah, imagine. Well, in your area of expertise, you see the results of the education system on those with learning disorders or brain differences. How's it impacting them?
There's that quote that says that everybody is a genius, but if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it will live its whole life believing it's stupid. And that's kind of a quote that you see, you know, every now and then. But the reality is I see that effect in my practice because I work with children, I work with teens, and I work with adults. And I'll see very successful adults that still to this day think of themselves as stupid because that was the felt sense that they received about themselves in school. And so one of the ways that I think about it is imagine if you went bowling and someone put up a curtain between where you threw the ball and where you knocked down the ball, where you knocked down the pins. And you never knew how many pins you were knocking over. You just didn't know. That's the way I think of the education system, because after the 12 years, nobody goes back and says, okay, well, how are they doing? And because I see the kids after they graduate and the ones with the learning disabilities, that what's happening is that they're struggling with depression, anxiety, and addictions. They are lacking an ambition because nobody told them, what are you really great at? Let's focus on being really good at something. And the other thing that I see is that they can't sell themselves. And we know that, I mean, even if you want to go get a job at the local, you know, sports basement or something, you have to be able to tell them what you're great at or why they need to hire you. And so for these reasons, if a person is learning in a way that's different from the current educational system, the consequences are pretty serious.
So how do we translate symptoms into needs? How do we give our children permission to meet those needs?
Well, I think that in terms of those needs, when we talk about, and of course we'll talk about ADHD because that's my main area of specialty, is we talk about being hyperactive. Well, what if we called that excitement? Or what if we called that a child who needs stimulation? Or what if we said, of course our kids need physical activity. Why don't we let them, you know, every 45 minutes go outside and have some physical activity? Or in terms of the need for stimulation, you know, I mean, there are alternative educational systems, and, you know, one of those, and I'm not here to advocate anything more than another, but, for example, in a Montessori classroom, kids can physically get up and move around and use their hands to touch things. And one of the story is I was told by a teacher recently when I was giving a talk, actually, with you guys down in L.A. at the Inspired Parenting Green Festival. And a teacher told me that there was a teacher who tried to teach her kids math because she was by using sugar cubes. And so she was having them stack them up, and they learned about cubes, and they learned about if you stack 10 this way and 10 this way, and then you stack it, and so learning about multiplication. And the principal found out what was going on and said, that will not happen in this school again. It is a distraction from learning what they need to learn. And it's kind of like the greatest fear I have that things like that are happening in the school system. And I couldn't believe that it was much worse than I could even imagine. And so that's what's happening in the school systems. So
I was going to say, you know, just a few weeks ago, I watched a PBS special on a school that was using a completely different technique of, you know, helping young children learn. And they were singing and they were, you know, slapping their bodies and acting things out and being very dramatic. And those kids were taking information in every single sense. And
right,
they were learning. So if some kids, some schools can do it, why can't others?
Well, now we have an answer to that question. Why can't others? Because there's some principals that feel that the pressure is so intense for them to get those test scores. And so when they hear about something that sounds like kids are playing around, they have actually told teachers to stop doing it. And, you know, here in California, for example, they recently changed the standardized testing to measure the level. And there was to the Common Core, and they found that a very significant percentage of children were not proficient, and it was more so, and it was because they had changed the actual test, and so that creates a lot of stress all of a sudden, like now we have to get our kids proficient, and the pressure goes on these tests, and there was article after article about what level of proficiency did this district have and that district have, and so that there is this element of teaching to the test, and that interferes with all the things I just said that kids need. They need stimulation, physical activity, and innovation, and inventiveness, and the opportunity to mix it up, creativity, innovation. Kids need to, you know, have the ability to create their own rules sometimes, and obviously there's not space for that in this climate of what's the level of proficiency each school district is getting.
Well, and yet we hear some of these new, you know, dot-coms, some of the big ones and some of the smaller new ones, and the whole ethic is to allow their, you know, staff, their team members to take time out to go for a walk, to, you know, skateboard down the corridors, to spend some time just spacing out or something because they know that it helps creativity.
Absolutely, and that's, you know, the irony. A lot of businesses will pay speakers to come in for thousands and thousands of dollars to help their workers become creative because in many industries nowadays, as people are just second-guessing what's going to, you know, what's going to be the next industry to go out of date, innovation is the coin of the realm. And, you know, a simple example of this is we've gone from taxis to Uber, and then once we get to driverless cars, what's Uber going to do? So everyone has to be innovating. And so the world knows that, but our schools are not teaching that.
You know, Tom Hartman, I can't remember the title. Oh, The Edison Gene, his book. And he made a very good point in there that, you know, throughout history, we've seen time and time again that the gene that is all about creativity is the one that we think of as ADHD. And his plea was, you know, let's not drug the creativity out of these children. I don't know if the drugs are going away, but, you know, let's not bore the creativity out of these children.
Right. And, you know, as we also, as we go, and creativity is so much about, I mean, I know you're going to get this because when you talk about the Edison gene, is failing. I mean, what I mean by that is making mistakes, because you don't, you're not creative unless you're trying something new, which by definition is experimenting. And experimenting means by definition, you find a lot of wrong ways before you find the right way. And how much do we learn when we say, oh, wait a minute, what does this explain that I didn't set out to explain? Or what have I discovered? Or why doesn't this work? And then you have a whole new set of questions and experiments to try out.
Well, in every book I've ever read about successful entrepreneurs, they all say they learned more from their mistakes than they did from their successes.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Inspired Parenting Radio Show. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. And I'm speaking with clinical psychologist Dr. Lara Honus-Webb, who's published several best-selling books and workbooks on the gifts of ADD and ADHD. After the break, we'll talk a little bit more about ADHD, which many think could be applied to pretty much all of our children today, and the hidden gifts it brings that schools are overlooking. We'll be back in just a few moments, probably about three, so don't go away.
Feed your soul with Waves of Consciousness on OM Times Radio. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
What if living didn't have to be so serious?
What if you could move beyond your problems with greater confidence and ease than you've ever imagined?
Throw your labels out the window and join the Irreverent Therapist for practical tips and a very different way of approaching the changes you would like to create.
Marilyn Bradford
and Pam Hodling
have empowered hundreds of people to come out of self-judgment, quit looking to experts, and begin to create the lives they desire.
Join us Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on the Irreverent Therapist Show.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of the Inspired Parenting Radio Show, where every week we bring you empowering information from the diverse fields of conscious parenting, education, neuroscience, consciousness, health, and metaphysics to support you in nurturing the best in your children. So if you're interested in understanding what shapes your children's minds, spirits, and hearts, join me every Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and prepare to be inspired.
Simone Millicis would like you to know that business can be fun, which is why she wrote the book, Joy of Business. What if you could have the joy of business rather than the stress and struggle? Most of the time, the only thing stopping you from a thriving business is you. In the Joy of Business book, Simone gives you access consciousness tools and pragmatic ways to get out of your own way and to create the business, life, and living you know is possible and beyond what this reality says is achievable. Business is joy. It's creation. It's generative. It can be the adventure of living. You can purchase your copy of the book through Amazon or Joy of Business website, www.accessjoyofbusiness.com. The Real Conscious Connection. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Inspired Parenting Show, and I'm speaking with clinical psychologist and world expert on ADD, Dr. Lara Honus-Webb, about whether today's education system is really preparing our kids for the world they'll be living in as adults. Lara, you've told me that there are four important questions that a concerned parent can ask themselves. What are they?
Well, if you have a child in the education system and you're concerned in the way that you and I are concerned, the first question you can ask is, why is this important to me? So what I mean by that is it's in that moment where your kid has the math test and they're tired and they come back from soccer practice and you're fighting. Ask yourself, what's going to happen if he doesn't study for 3 hours for the math test? Is he going to get a B? Is he going to get a C? What are the consequences of that? And then think about that, is this really that big of a deal? And sometimes parents, if they're real serious and sincere, they might say to themselves, I need my kids to achieve because I don't feel good about myself, and their achievement reflects on me. So that's one of them. The second one is, what difference will this make for my kids' future? And you know what? If you look at there's a lot of encouraging things if you're really stressed out, a lot of getting A's and B's. We now know that emotional intelligence success more than IQ or the intelligence quotient. We know that if your kids aren't playing and if you're over-focused on academics in preschool and elementary school, even into middle school, they're going to be impaired socially and even in sensory functioning because play is how children develop. And the benefits of homework in elementary school have been found to be not at all evident. And then as you get into middle school, the minimal benefits at all and things that can easily be replaced in other ways. And then the question is, are there negative consequences to what I'm asking from my child? This is important because you can't pretend that if I just push my kids harder, they'll do better and there's no negative consequences to that. Let's just be real. It causes stress. Well, how do you think that conflict between you and your child affects that child? You're creating stress for the family. And again, as a psychologist, what I see is that can turn into depression, anxiety. As they get older, it becomes many different types of addictions. And now you've got a bigger set of problems than your kids not getting the grades you want them to have. And finally, what toll is this taking on me? I mean, where did we get the idea that if we completely sacrifice ourselves financially, emotionally, in terms of our life purpose, to create a child star, that that's a healthy thing? Because we know that your child's health is going to be directly related to the parent's health. In fact, parental depression is one of the biggest predictors of different diagnoses and labels that kids get. And so ask yourself, is this worth it? And really begin to notice that if it's making you depressed or even depleted, you need to make some different choices.
You know, one of the things I've noticed, and it happened to me, you know, with my own mother, is that it really wasn't about me. It was about her and what she felt, in order to reflect on her being a good mother, I had to perform in a certain way.
Right. And that's exactly why I'm inviting parents to ask themselves this question, because the thing is that can take a toll. And that the other thing is in that process is, and again, I want to just go back to some of the earlier issues, getting all A's and B's, we don't know how that's going to map onto real success in the real world. We know emotional intelligence ends up being more predictive of real success. The other thing is, let's just get to it. What do you think kids learn to be happy and healthy when they've got a happy and healthy parent? If you're depleted and angry and resentful and running your kids around trying to make them better than other people's kids, what do you think your kids are learning? Monkey see, monkey do. If you want your kids to be happy and healthy, you need to put some of your energy into yourself and can really backfire. to try to create child prodigies.
Shifting perceptions is a really hard thing to do, isn't it? And if a parent feels that how their kid performs says a lot about them or makes up for, you know, the things that they weren't able to do, how do they shift their perceptions? Do you have any suggestions or tips for that?
To me, the simplest thing is let's broaden our definition of success, okay? I mean, how much do we love the creative kid, the nonconformist kid? Think about the people that we like, the people that can think for themselves, people that love learning. You know, I will share with you, you know, and I don't sit here to broadcast my personal beliefs that other people should embrace them, but for me as a parent, I've struggled with this too. And so what I decided is my priorities, my mission statement is that my kids, I want them to love learning and I want them to think for themselves, because I really believe that if a kid loves to learn, you don't really going to have to worry too much, because what does that mean? It means they're going to seek out learning in their own ways. The other thing is, whatever's going to happen 10 years from now, which none of us can really predict, we want our kids to think for themselves. And why is that? Because the world's going to continue to change very quickly, and that maybe that's the new, you know, the new constant is that you need to figure out and think critically, is this a technology that's going to last? Is this industry going to be around 5 years from now? You know, the other thing is just as the world relies more on social media and these technologies, just being able to discriminate what's healthy, what's not healthy, and, you know, for your kids' basic well-being, I think being able to think for yourself is going to be one of the most important traits.
Now, you also advocate creating your own educational mission statement. Tell us about that.
Well, it's exactly that. It's about saying, what is important for me that I want my kids to learn? You know, one thing I think is really interesting, a lot of parents I've seen this in some circles, encouraging their children to become entrepreneurs because they realize that, you know, the other crisis in the United States is what they, you know, that student loan crisis. And so the idea is you want kids to be thinking about how can I make money in lots of different ways. And it could be their side business, their hobby business. It could be a business that they do while they're in school. They may not go to, if it takes you, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to get an education, what if you invested that into a really sound business plan? And so people are saying, well, instead of pushing my kids to be the best soccer player so they can get a scholarship to college, maybe I'll let them practice their cupcake business that they've been talking about. So it's, as a parent, really being, and again, I wouldn't recommend that to every parent or even a segment of parents, but figuring out for you as a parent, what do you value, and realizing that your kids can't be the best, really, really good at everything.
You know, one of our advisory panel members on Inspired Parenting magazine, Thomas Haller, who is a family coach, a psychologist, etc. He did a wonderful thing for one of his children when his son was very, very young, probably, you know, still in single digits. He helped his son publish stories that he'd written, gave that boy just the most incredible boost of confidence. He ended up traveling around the country talking to schools. And now that he's at university, he's writing wonderful articles for us.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's wonderful. That's such a great story. I love to hear those kinds of stories because it really suggests to parents, you know, that there's so many different ways to do it. And, you know, I always think in terms of, I don't think the education system is preparing kids to be world changers because they're not really inviting them to think for themselves. And that's something, you know, when my kids pick up a special interest, I always let them run with it, even if I'm like, okay, you know, they've got homework or they've got this thing or they've got that thing. I let them run with those interests. And because I think they have to explore things on their own and have that sense of what you said, gaining confidence.
Isn't that the thing, though? I mean, it's very hard for parents if their kids are doing something not to interfere and say, oh, well, if you do it this way, you know, you'll get a better result. But standing back, encouraging them and letting them go all the way as far as they want to go with it is just the most amazing thing that one can do for them.
I agree with that. Because what are they learning? Self-direction. And I think one of the things that we can predict about the future is that self-direction is going to be essential. And again, because, you know, as technologies take over, then, you know, people may be more in need of, you know, as I said, it's going to be, why are people going to take these long commutes to get to work when they can have maybe virtual reality conferences? And so in terms of how people are going to be spending their time, you know, having that self-direction is going to be important.
I think one of the other things that many parents struggle with is the fact that their school tends to give their children so much pressure, so much work, so much homework, that they never seem to have any time to just sit and think.
Yes, that's a very, very real issue. And I do think there are answers and solutions to that. I mean, I know of schools that, for example, they meet an hour extra every day, but they don't have any homework. Or, you know, there are answers to those questions. There really are. And again, I'm not an educational reformer or, you know, that's not really my line of work. But I think at least for parents, as they relate, if nothing else, and you're a parent and you're not in the position to change the whole education system as I am not, one of the things that I see is this cycle where parents yell at their kids at night because of their difficulties with their homework. And if the only thing you get from this radio show is that you realize, oh my gosh, this is unreasonable. Maybe this isn't healthy. Maybe I don't have the answer. But maybe if my kid's not doing everything I want them to do, I'm at least going to have the presence of mind not to scream at them as if there's something wrong with them. Because what that sets up is not only are they having issues in terms of the actual grades that are coming back, but they sense my parents are disappointed in me. My parents are angry at me. Nothing I do is good enough. And that creates depression. And it can be really scary when young kids get depressed. And the consequences can be very serious for that dynamic that gets set up.
Wow, absolutely, yeah. And I mean, after a hard day at school, sometimes they just don't have the energy.
Right, yes, exactly. And you know, and I'm with some parents, they say, well, we got to start early so we don't have to stay up late and we need to get this over with. One thing I always recommend is that kids come home from school and they're processing a lot. And it's like their container is full and they need some time to kind of press the reset button is what I call it.
Yeah.
And that can be time in nature. It can be exercise. It can be relaxation meditation app. It can be goofing off.
We'll come back to that, Lava. You're listening to the Inspired Parenting Radio Show. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. I'm with Dr. Lara Honus-Webb, and we're talking about the current education system, which is a big concern for many parents. So after the break, we'll talk a little bit more about what you can do to take care of you so that you can take care of them. Stay tuned.
Bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. OM Times Radio. IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
Dr. Kevin here, and I want to invite you every Thursday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, to join me on the Dr. Kevin Show, where we have a diversity of guests who help you step outside the box, behind the curtain, and see what a load of crap is going on in the world today, so you have more information with which to make better decisions. We'll see you there. Namaste.
Eros Evolution is where sexuality and spirituality meets. Join me, clinical sexologist Martha Tara Lee, on Eros Evolution on Thursdays, 4 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio.
The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for School Girls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes.
The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is. The best of holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Welcome back. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and you're listening to the Inspired Parenting Show. And I'm speaking with Dr. Laura Honus-Webb about whether the current education system is really preparing your child for the real world and what kind of stress their challenges at school are having on you. Laura, I read something that you wrote, that one of the tips that you offer parents is to take a class and make their kids watch them. What do you mean by that?
Well, I would just say try this as an experiment and see what happens. And the reason I suggest this is because think about parents who spend hours and hours watching their kids in various activities and are not nourishing their own spirit, their own passions, their own interests, even their own health. And so one of the things you're doing by doing that is you're forcing yourself to take to pursue an interest of your own or to try something new. And so you're keeping yourself alive. The second thing is just notice what happens when you ask your kids to watch you. And I have to admit, I tried this experience myself, and I realized that my kids were very, very upset. They couldn't imagine taking an hour out of their day where they just had to sit there and find a way to occupy themselves while I was doing something. And what I realized is that what are the bigger goals that we have for our kids? And I'll be honest with you, mine are I want my children to be kind, and I want them to be understanding of other people's perspective, to be able to get inside other people's heads. And I really realized that in some ways that by running them around without asking them to consider, you know, for example, what is my life like, or, you know, that they had become kind of self-centered. And so this was a wake-up call for me. And one of the things that I explained to them, you know, was, you know, that they have to be considerate of other people's wants and needs. And also it was made them realize and be appreciative of what parents do every day, all day for their kids. And the other thing is that they should really see their parents taking care of themselves, because let's go back again to the very basics, monkey see, monkey do. If you had a parent that was self-sacrificing and never had their own life, how does that feel? What are you learning by watching? That's what you're going to take on. You know, one story I heard was a family, when their mother turned 60, the kids all got together and went to get her a bracelet with a charm. And the jeweler said, well, what is your mother's interest? What does she enjoy? And they looked at the jeweler and said, do you have a vacuum cleaner? They had no idea what their mother was interested in, what her passions were, nothing.
Do you know, that just reminds me of a story my daughter told me the other day when my grandson said something very dismissively about, you know, housework being a woman's job. Mm-hmm. And she got really upset.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so we have to keep going back to what are we modeling for our kids? And if you're, you know, and I listen to kids and they talk about what their evenings are like, where the parents are yelling at them, and then I talk to the parents and they're like, I don't even know this math that they need to learn, and everyone's so frustrated. What are we modeling for our kids? Conflict, anger, you know, yelling at people when we're frustrated. And we're also teaching them what's the most important thing, which seems to be just about doing better than other people.
Yeah, the competition. Laura, tell me, you're the author of over 25 published scholarly articles, and your books include The Gift of ADHD, The Gift of ADHD Activity Book, The Gift of Adult ADD, The ADHD Workbook for Teens, and Listening to Depression, How Understanding Your Pain Can Heal Your Life. What sparked your interest in this arena?
Well, a combination of having one grown up in a family where I had a brother that had ADHD and diagnosed at a really young age, so it was always a very familiar thing to me. And then later in my life, I realized I also had ADHD. But when I was in graduate school, I was both seeing clients in the consulting room and I was teaching undergraduate classes. And what I realized was that in the classroom, I really enjoyed the ADHD students the most. And one of the reasons was because they were thinking for themselves. And I realized that they were the ones who I would learn from them as much as they would learn from me. And I noticed, why is there this correlation between these kids with ADHD, and they're not doing really good on the multiple choice test, but they're the ones that are more engaged with this material. The straight-A students would come to my office hours and say, what's on the test on Thursday? Or page 32 says this, but page 50 says that, and I need to get it right on the test. Which one's right? But they weren't really, you know, engaging the material on a deeper level. And that was when I started to think about what are the gifts of ADHD.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that is so interesting, because for probably 15 years or more, it's been a problem, you know, give these kids Ritalin, get them focused on their schoolwork, etc. And I love what Tom Hartman said. It's not that they can't focus on anything. It's that they take in everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I also, from seeing what it looked like in the classroom, I also had the sense that these are the kids that, if these were the kids that I, as a at that time I was a teaching, I was a, what was I, not a professor at the time, I was a graduate student teaching classes, but I realized they had a great contribution to make, but they were crippled in their self-esteem. And I thought, how did this happen? There's one story in The Gift of Adult ADD of a person who actually dropped out of school at the age of 16 and started to work with computers, and then worked his way up in a corporation. And then one day they sent all of the managers to a managerial training thing, and he took all of these tests, and the feedback that came back to him was that he was the top gun. He had scored off the charts on everything. And the one thing he said was, how did I get through 16 years of school and not one teacher in any class noticed that I had these talents, and here I am at a major corporation, at a meeting of managers, and I am the top gun among all of these people.
Isn't that sad? And, you know, bless the teachers' hearts. They're under the stress, as we said earlier, you know, to meet certain standards and teach within certain parameters, restrictive ones. They don't have the time. I love what I read when I read about the Khan Academy in Time magazine a few years back. And, you know, one of the questions about the Khan Academy they were presenting to this guy is, well, aren't you taking teachers' jobs away from them? And he said no, because, you know, the method of teaching that he's made quite popular is it frees the teacher up to be able to support the children, to be able to spend more time with each child and get to know that child and work with them rather than be constantly, you know, shepherding them towards a particular goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know we just have a couple minutes here, and it just reminds me of something that happened to me in my education, which was when I was in high school, I was in an English class, which of course didn't really go on to be my life calling. And I remember one time the teacher, Mr. Freemuth, he called on me and he said, Dr. Hannes. And I was absolutely blown away. I was like, why did he call me Dr. Hannes? And that was a time in my life where it never would have crossed my mind that I would have been a person that would go on to be any kind of a doctor. But it really sat with me for days. I said, why did he call me doctor? Does he think I can be a doctor? And again, at that point in my life, I had never thought that was a possibility for myself. And of course, over the years, that just sat with me for a long time. And I did go on, of course, to get a PhD. And I know that that moment was a pivotal moment. And how much time did that take for him? I don't even know why he did that. But what I'm saying is, if you as a teacher think about the impact you can have on a child, even just saying Dr. Hannes to me, it changed the course of my life. And so if teachers have that free moment to think about, wow, I could make a difference in these kids' life by being encouraging, we could have a different world.
You know, I think teachers need to be encouraged to remember and be given the freedom and time to remember. They're spirit whisperers. You know, they have the ability to whisper to these children's souls.
And that's what happened in that moment, you know. That why did he say that in that moment? I don't know, but I know that he called on me, I answered, and it really shifted things for me that someone could think of me in terms of Dr. Hanna.
Lara, it's been a delight talking with you. Tell our listeners how they can learn more about your work.
Thank you. At website, addisagift.com, there's a lot of resources there to learn more about my books and The Gift of ADHD, The Gift of Adult ADD, The ADHD Workbook for Teens. They're all at Amazon.com and bookstores.
And I just want to let our listeners know that you are going to be with us on an Inspired Parenting free Ask the Expert teleseminar on November the 11th. And anyone listening is invited to register and join us there, and they can address their own questions to you directly.
Great. I really look forward to getting questions.
I look forward to having that conversation with you in a couple of weeks' time, Lara. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sandy.
Thanks. And our first Ask the Experts is actually this Wednesday, October the 27th at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And joining me will be Maria Emma Palullo-Willis, who'll be expanding on our recent conversation about how discovering your child's unique learning style can eradicate any learning challenges and misfit labels and help them achieve confidence and success at school. If you'd like to ask your question and get instant answers from an expert, you can register for this or any other free Ask the Experts teleseminar using the green box on the homepage of inspiredparenting.com. In the meantime, I just want to let you know that Inspired Parenting is more than a magazine. It's a global conscious parenting movement, which is why we intend to make the valuable information it offers available to deserving parents and families who otherwise could not afford it. Our goal is to recruit 1,000 new subscribers between now and Thanksgiving. And you can join the movement, give thanks, give back, share the benefits of Inspired Parenting magazine by subscribing at inspiredparenting.com. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. Thanks for being with me today, and I look forward to being with you at the same time next week. Till then, it's goodbye from me.